Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is The Big Breakdown. A long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Two detectives made Dwayne Davis a promise. Dwayne Davis was Keith E.D., the man on trial for the murder of Tupac Shakur. The promise was made in 2008. Tupac, by the way, died in 1996. One of them said it out loud on tape. And this is kind of why we're here today, because Dwayne Davis, Keith E.D., well, he believed it. He believed what the officers told him. Now, what he revealed, and the weight of it is like, well, I don't know that we can keep that a secret. And who made the promise and what the restrictions on that promise are really are the whole reason there's a trial going on, because Keefe D thought, well, I can say whatever I want now, whether that's making things up, as he argues, or it's telling his truth, as he once strongly argued in books, on podcasts, in interviews, anywhere anyone would listen and provide a little payday. And one of them said it out loud on this tape that was played in court. Nothing you say today can be used against you. That's where we're at. That's where the crux of a lot of this case is. Another voice on the recording went further. Nothing leaves this room. Gee, I wonder why people are hesitant to testify or reveal information on these cases in this world. On day four of Davis's murder trial in Las Vegas, that recording played through the courtroom speakers. The jury deciding whether he dies in prison heard every word of the promise. Some people in the gallery shook their heads as it played. Tupac Shakur's family sat still and listened. The detectives weren't there to ask Davis about Tupac at all, and the story he told them wasn't the story he'd given the government the first time they asked. Jurors watched a transcript roll across the screen while the audio played, some of them taking notes. What they heard was Davis in his own voice describing the night of September 7th, 1996. Four men riding a white Cadillac near the Las Vegas Strip. They spot Shakur hanging out with a black BMW, people on the sidewalk calling his name, Suge Knight, the driver's seat. The Cadillac pulls up alongside, and Shakur's car sits on the opposite side from Davis. If we would have been on my side, I would have blasted. That's the defendant on tape to police saying he would have shot Tupac if the car had been on the opposite side. It was the first time Davis ever discussed his involvement in the killing with authorities. Instead, Davis said he passed his gun to the back seat. He handed it to DeAndre Big Dre Smith, who did not want it. And Davis's nephew, Orlando Baby Lane Anderson, took the weapon and started firing. Davis said he figured Knight died too. Knight survived. Tupac was 25 years old and he died 6 days later. Davis, now 63, this crime now 30 years ago, is charged with murder with a deadly weapon with a gang enhancement, and he faces life in prison if convicted. He's pled not guilty. Prosecutors told the jury at openings that Davis never pulled the trigger. They allege he planted the shooting, or planned the shooting, rather, as revenge for the beating his nephew took from Shakur's entourage at the MGM Grand hours earlier, after Anderson Orlando, the trigger man, allegedly snatched a death row chain off a man in Shakur's circle. Remember the death row chains? Davis was at the Mike Tyson fight that night, but wasn't part of the brawl. The jury has already watched the beating on video. You may have watched it if you followed this case sometime in the last 30 years. For 30 years, the argument about this case has been about who fired the shots. The jury doesn't need that answer because Davis isn't accused of shooting anyone. The indictment lays out the state's theory in layers. Davis allegedly killed Shakur or aided in the killing by obtaining a gun and handing it to someone else, or conspired to carry it out. The burden is the plan and the weapon. The tape has Davis describing both. The hunt for Shakur's car, the gun moving from his hand towards the back seat, and what he says he'd have done if the angle had been his. The most famous question in hip-hop history was always aimed at the wrong seat of the Cadillac. Here's why any of this exists on tape. The detectives in that 2008 room were part of a task force investigating a different murder, the killing of the notorious B.I.G. Davis had briefly been a suspect in that case before investigators moved on. Everybody was a suspect at the time. Darren Dupree, one of the detectives from the interview, testified to that at trial. Davis walked in to talk about one murder, and he handed them a different one. It also wasn't the first story he'd given the government. In 1998, in a proffer session, and in a 1999 prison interview, Davis told the FBI he had nothing to do with Shakur's death, according to testimony from a former agent. He said his nephew wasn't involved either, and he pointed toward New York, toward people connected to Sean Combs. Those FBI sessions were never audio recorded. The agent testified, so they survive only as written reports. The 2008 interview is the one with a voice. So the same man gave the government opposite accounts of the same murder, and none of it happened under oath. His lawyer told the jury the prosecution's narrative is fiction. He said there are no facts pointing to his client, and the police never charged Davis years ago because they knew he was, in his lawyer's words, full of crap. The state's answer is the strange part. Prosecutors agree that Davis lies. They're asking the jury to decide which time he told the truth. Is it when it's convenient for us, or is it over here when it's not? You decide. Dupree handed them that argument from the witness stand. He testified that he believed in the 2008 account because Davis put the gun in his own nephew's hand. Anderson had been dead 10 years by then, killed in a 1998 shootout, never charged with anything. Dupree's reasoning? No uncle puts that on a dead nephew's name unless it's true. The state had this tape in 2008. The indictment didn't come till September of 23, and the promise is the reason. That proffer agreement legally blocked police from building charges out of what Davis said in that room. The relationship went further than protection. Dupree testified the task force signed Davis up as a confidential informant in 2009 and traveled with him to New York. Davis later called the arrangement the deal of a lifetime. Then the room started leaking, and Davis leaked it second. Greg Kading, one of the detectives on that tape, published a book in 2011 that revealed details from the protected interview. Documentaries later aired portions of it. The words that were supposed to stay in that room circled in print for years, while Davis remained uncharged. Davis eventually joined in. Well, if they're talking about it, can't I? He sat for a BET documentary in 2018 and described the fatal shots coming from the back seat, keeping the shooter's name, he said, for the code of the streets, although walking right up to revealing it. In February 2019, he published a memoir describing his desire for retaliation, obtaining a pistol and searching the strip for Shakur. Then came the paid interviews, repeating all of it. Prosecutors say that's what killed his protection. Their position, the agreement, covered the room, and Davis shredded it in public, voluntarily, for money. The defense says those sessions were meant to stay confidential and that the book was dramatized to sell copies with no way to know which parts Davis even wrote. The judge sided with the state before trial. The jury gets the book, the interviews, and the tape itself. Though she said she had some concerns about the legality of admitting the proffer statements. Even Shakur followed the code Davis couldn't keep. A former officer testified that he rode in the ambulance and kept asking the dying rapper who shot him. Shakur refused to say, telling him, "We'll take care of it." At opening statements, a prosecutor told the jury that few people have ever been willing to talk about the killing and that Davis is the one person who has a hard time being silent. That line carries more weight than anything physical the state owns. There's no gun evidence, no Cadillac, and every other man from that car is dead. The case is Davis's mouth plus 15 years of proof that he couldn't keep it closed. Which leaves this jury with a strange job. Both sides agree the defendant is unreliable. The state needs jurors to believe he told the truth once in one room in 2008. The defense doesn't need him to believe that everything from the tape to the documentary to the book was a performance for whoever was happened to be paying. The tape puts Davis in front of the passenger seat of the Cadillac. Davis has publicly insisted he's innocent and says he was home in Los Angeles that night. Those two claims can't share a verdict. So the jury has to pick which version of the same man it believes. In 2008, two detectives promised Duane Davis that nothing would leave that room. All of it left. Through a detective's book, through Davis's own, and finally through courtroom speakers into a room where Tupac Shakur's family sat listening to the accused describe that night in his own voice. Will they convict? Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. You know, you go back to the proffer agreement. Should that have ever left? Should there be more stipulations on proffer agreements? I think a lot of attorneys would agree there should be, but is there, and is our proffer agreements just basically like a, well, let's not rattle the cage here after we've walked away from it. Maybe because you rattle that cage and this is what could happen. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue it right there as we continue to cover the trial for the murder of Tupac Shakur every single day. Press subscribe wherever you're listening or watching so you don't miss any of our coverage. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's go over to another case that's going on right now, 30 years in the making. Tupac. Tupac Shakur was shot
here we go.
At a red light in Las Vegas at Cobalt and Flamingo. And I've pointed that out every time I've driven through that intersection. You know what happened right here, right? And whoever's in the car, it's like, what? I'm like, Tupac. And there's a little memorial by one of the lights there that still is there to this day that people put things at. I drove it this spring, fall. I was over in Vegas not that long ago, and I got to point it out to my daughter as we drove by Cobalt.
Who said who, what, where, when?
Yeah, and Harper knew Tupac. Anyway, 30 years ago, Cobalt and Flamingo, after the Mike Tyson fight, for three decades, nobody ever charged in the murder of Tupac. Now there's one man sitting in the courtroom, Duane Keefe D. Davis, and the prosecution's best evidence is that book that he wrote talking about it. He bragged about it for years on camera, in interviews, in a memoir called Compton Street Legend. And now that he's actually on trial for murder, his defense is telling the jury it was all fiction, all lies. He just did it for profit. He became the I killed Tupac industry. The question the audience is screaming is the one the jury has to answer. Can the man talk himself out of a murder charge that he's already admitted that he's guilty of? That's where this case is at. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program, my co-host with us as we discuss this. This is, I mean, it can be any case, really. This guy literally wrote a book about it. He went on YouTube, on Vlad TV, a big hip-hop show, talked about it. He told law enforcement about it through a proffer agreement. And now his lawyer is standing in front of a jury saying it was all fiction. It was all a big ol' lie. Robin, from an FBI perspective, from a behavioral perspective, when someone confesses to the same crime in four different formats over 30 years, is there any version of that where it's not real?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Living in the world of maybe. So having written four books and fictionalized stories in those things because I have to protect the national security of the United States and our sources, methods, and allies, I understand the fictionalizing of things, although they're all based in core truths mm-hmm. and outcomes and things like that. So I understand what publishers do, trying to get a better story out of things. So they're going to sell more millions of books so they can make a profit off of you. So they're not really vested in your success as much as they're vested in their own. So I get that. I researched this as well. Books are often very commonly used as evidence in cases, and they can be used against you. What's going to be hard for him to overcome, if he can even overcome it as well, is not the statements, because people make false confessions all the time. He can claim that this is a fiction for selling books, and it sells a great story. But if law enforcement can go back and corroborate all the things that he says in that book, the timelines, and show the corroboration between real life evidence and the storyline in the book, and they overlap completely, that's a very, very hard thing to overcome. Because again, what you're showing is his book outlines his life arc.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we talk about all the time. And then if his life arc that's supposedly in his book, which is a nonfiction memoir, and he's now claiming it's a fiction memoir, but actually the real life investigators can show that the real life arc, backed by forensic evidence, backed by interviews, backed by all the data they've collected over the years, matches that memoir. That's a very, very difficult thing to overcome if you can even do it.
Well, and the premise of this all is it starts with an agreement with investigators over the murder of Biggie, actually. Mm-hmm. The notorious B.I.G., Christopher Wallace, which happened within a year of Tupac's murder. And he was testifying about information regarding that case. And in that testimony, which is called a proffer agreement, and Eric has said it here, Bob has said it here, they don't advise a lot of clients to ever do it because they're very shady, if you will, these agreements with law enforcement. Sometimes they're not in writing. Sometimes they're just verbal. Sometimes right. they're the only way you're going to get off the hook for something. So either take this or we're going to lock you up. So people take the chance because it's better than the alternative. They're not the most solid ground to be walking on. Keefe D, basically the way this story goes is, took the proffer agreement, talked about being in the car, not being the trigger man. Orlando Anderson allegedly was a trigger man, but he's the one who was a shot caller, baller, 20-inch blaze, owned an Impala, called a good late tonight. I mean, okay, you don't know that song, but I taught him. He's basically the shot caller here in this thing. And he's arguing that, okay, I said it for this, to help this investigation under this proffer agreement. I can't go and share this story now. I can't write a book about it. I can't talk about it in interviews. The government is saying, no, you can't. That was just for this, but we never really gave you the stipulations of what you could and couldn't do either. So now we're coming after you because you violated this unsaid agreement kind of that we had here. But it was his choice. It was his choice to not just let it die there with the one-on-one private conversation with investigators. He openly chose to basically make it his brand, make it what he's known for. This is his legend. He was the one in the car that gave Orlando the gun, that called the shots, and then profited it off of the story for 20 years. It's a hard one to overcome, considering that's your story, unless you're just going to come out and say you're a complete fraud, which is basically what he's doing at this point in time. Here's a comment from one of our channels. Everybody else who was in that white Cadillac is dead.
Yep.
Orlando Anderson is dead. The two other passengers dead. Keefe D is the only one alive. How do you prosecute a 30-year-old murder when your defendant is both the only suspect and the only witness that is still alive? Yeah, that's That's difficult. But yeah. I think you do when the guy wrote books about it and did interviews.
Yeah,
and he shut up. You'd have a lot harder case.
That's it. You know, if you wrote about it. And again, if he was in a different state when he did this, it might be something different because, yeah, he wasn't the trigger man. He doesn't claim he's the trigger man, but it's in Nevada, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, in Las Vegas.
Yeah. The law there is that if you were the one who orchestrated it and facilitated it, you can be charged with the same murder of it. So had he done this in some other state, he might have been getting free with it. I'm actually pretty impressed that the law enforcement actually got a hair up their butt and did something about this case 30 years later. So I'm more, you know, it's interesting with things like this. I get really curious about the people involved. It's like, what inspired them to want to do that? Because they're kind of putting themselves out there. When you start dealing with old gang members and gang leaders, you know, you're kind of putting yourself in an interesting spot in life.
Well, I mean, one of the biggest problems with this case has always been no snitching and people not talking. I mean, there's been investigators on this case forever, and there's been many documentaries about it, and essentially where it all ends is, well, the people who did know information or could provide information have chosen not to provide information, and that kind of puts the investigation at a standstill. They can only be as good as the information that's being provided and what they can actually get to. Suge Knight was in the car with Tupac when it happened. He survived. He's sitting in prison right now and reportedly won't cooperate with the trial.
Right.
If the one living witness on the victim's side won't testify, what does that tell you about how this world actually works, and does it matter for the actual verdict? The people involved here, I don't think really have much of a vested interest in justice, the way that the rest of society looks at justice, meaning locking someone up for this crime. Most of this just gets handled in the street. And 30 years later, it's already been handled in the street. Everyone else is dead at this point.
Right. And snitches get stitches. That's why I'm not talking in prison, because he's still there. You know, I go on the pragmatic side of these things behind the scenes about how the sausage is made, as Bob Mata says.
Yeah.
Looking at the motivations for taking this case on and reinvigorating it after 30 years, one, you want justice done. You know, on an altruistic side, on our side, we're saying, oh, wow, you know, some really diligent investigators, you know, said we have to have served justice here and everything. But remember, there's a lot of cases that are unsolved you can be served justice on. You know, believe it or not, I would put money on the bet that at some point, there's someone inside an administration somewhere out in Las Vegas that says, hey, we need some attention, we need some funding, we need some collars, we need an easier low-hanging fruit one that we can attack to bring attention to this, because we need a resource here, we need to have more detectives of this, so we need to be able to justify it. There's all kind of things going on behind the scenes that typically people never see, that I've seen extensively, that would also give added motivation to re-go at this case. But when you don't have any witnesses willing to talk, you know, we've had such amazing advancements in law enforcement. Even just listen to the great Bob Mata's Gacy file case called Buried. He talks about, you know, the things they had available to them in the 70s for law enforcement investigators compared to now. It's vastly different. And so even when this happened to now, the DNA evidence that might be available and all other forensic analysis that's available now that wasn't available then could be added to this case. But again, the book itself and being able to then corroborate timelines from other investigative techniques that are available to us now that weren't available then might have been a reason why they took another swing at this. And it's got a strong chance, I think, just because of that book.
I think it became such low-hanging fruit that they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
That they couldn't not go after this at some point, because it sat there forever. And you literally had the person who's claiming they are the shot caller on this going on interviews all the time. It's like one a year you're finding Keefe D on, basically talking about the same story about him. I mean, and it's like, Jesus. Like, I remember watching them going, like, he's like literally admitting to this crime. Like, how is he not going to be charged with this? Surprise. I mean, at some point, when you tempt fate by throwing that out there so many ways, they're going to come after you. I mean, I think if he had just shut up, We wouldn't be here. None of this would be going on.
Yeah.
And I mean, his proffer agreement would have stood, but he decided that he was going to make this a brand, and his ego is twisted as it is to think that, well, this is what I want to be known for. This is my legacy. That's an interesting one to like want to be going down with. Was more important than his freedom, and I think he thought that that he was above it because talk about confirmation bias here. He had basically 30 years of freedom, being able to go out there and scream from the top of the hills, "I was involved in the shooting of Tupac," and nobody came for him until they did.
And only in the last about 10 years from my research did he kind of turn a leaf over from what he was doing. But so here's an interesting little factoid, Tony, that we've talked about in other cases. Did you know the head of the department that is investigating this case is Steve Wolfson, the Clark County District Attorney? Did you know his current term ends on January 4th, 2027, and he's running for re-election? And that the current election is scheduled for November 3rd, 2026? I wonder if someone wanted a little bit more notoriety of being able to bring a big case to bear before his election.
And interesting timing that this has been delayed so many times, right up to the butting up to the election itself.
Yeah. Look at me.
Wonder what that's about.
When you always got to look at intent and motivations behind absolutely everything. When something stands out and is a big wobble and a deviation from what you'd normally expect, and so something that's been dead for 30 years all of a sudden gets resurrected, you just don't look at the people themselves, you know, the perpetrator, the accused, and those in a circle. You look at absolutely everyone involved to see what you can discern from the intent, because that helps us predict behaviors, helps us understand what's going on, and then look for wobbles other places. For me, this begs the question, when you see someone going after an old case like this, all right, so who's bored? There's any other cases going on in Las Vegas of murders?
Yeah, it's not like there's a shortage of them there, really.
Yeah.
That's very true. And there's so many cases there. That's like kind of the missing link as to why is this happening now?
Not saying it's not righteous, but there's a lot of other things. And if you're looking at a reason why, well, there's one more big wobble.
You can be righteous, but also have incentives simultaneously.
Yes.
But I guess the question is more like what came, you know, was a chicken before the egg? Are you doing it for the righteous reasons? And then this just happens to be the added value to it. Or is it, I need this added value. What's something righteous I can get myself involved in? Either way, if it reaches the truth at the end of the day, I'm cool with it,
absolutely.
But only if it's truly going to go in the direction of reaching the truth. And we shall see. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We will continue our conversation right there.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.